breakthrough treatment found in no other hair care line. Here's how it works. Cell Therapy Breakthrough Formula, it nourishes the hair and scalp for hair that is noticeably thicker, stronger, longer, and healthier looking. It really is. Here's the deal. I used to have split ends, and it was dry and brittle, and it's finally gotten long and thick. It really does work. They offer a 365-day money-back guarantee, a statement of confidence, again, found with no other hair care product. Seriously. So go online now to get your special introductory discount when you select Angie Austin Daybreak USA at checkout. Great hair, one click away at ovationhair.com. And remember, click on Angie Austin Daybreak USA for the introductory discount. ovationhair.com, ovationhair.com.
A 20-year-old college baseball player is dead after being shot dead while playing Pokemon Go in the Girardelli Square area of San Francisco. Here's family friend John Kirby speaking to KGO-TV.
There was a large group of people playing Pokemon, and him and his buddy started playing as well. Calvin got a little bit ahead of his friend and kind of went around a corner.
The Muslim boy in Texas who created a suitcase bomb that he claimed was just a clock is now suing the school district in Irving, Texas. A school district spokesman says the system is denying it violated the rights of the boy. He was arrested after bringing the clock to school. The boy's family filed suit against school officials and others. The family says the incident prompted death threats, and that's why they had to leave the United States. Major problems for Delta Airlines today with the power outage shutting down flights. Here's one frustrated traveler.
Obviously, it's frustrating. You hate waiting. Just starting to get concerned because my kids start school tomorrow and I'm worried about them getting home.
USA Radio News.
What's at stake at this election? A lot. From the freedom to publicly practice and proclaim your faith to the nomination of Supreme Court justices, matters of critical importance to Christians are looming in the days ahead. That's why we invite you to join us on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. for the Values Voters Summit. Come to learn, be encouraged, and meet others who will stand for the renewal of this great nation. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information.
If you've ever wondered how the president approves or disproves certain drone strikes around the world, now there's a document that shows you. Here's Chris Barnes.
A previously secret 18-page document now made public showing how the potential targets may be chosen and approved by the president. The president's policy guidance, or PPG, lays out in detail the procedures necessary to take lethal action against high-value targets. The policy also calls for an annual review of persons who've been authorized to be the targets of drone attacks. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
The NFL's San Diego Chargers starting their camp off on a bad note as one of their interns was a victim of a hit and run. No.
Officials say the 23-year-old intern had been celebrating a friend's birthday in Pacific Beach on Friday when a silver sedan swerved around a parked car into oncoming traffic. The car hit the intern and his friend.
No, you can take a coat and take a tie off if you want. I don't care.
The intern
nobody's
going to
see
you. Skull fractures and brain trauma due to the crash.
Not yet.
The intern's father hasn't left his side since the crash and says his son is now in God's hands. Police are still looking for the driver.
I've been doing mental
Jason
health matters
Capadonia,
show prior
San Diego.
An American fencer made history by becoming the first U.S. athlete to compete in the Olympics wearing a hijab. Espaillat Muhammad sported a plain black Muslim headscarf under a red, white, and blue mask.
She
won her opening bout in the women's saber tournament, but then was knocked out in the next round.
Yeah.
For more news, head online to westernjournalism.com. USA Radio News, I'm Jason Wirt.
Did you know that one in five people are affected by mental illness?
Already,
NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer family-to-family a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness.
Have one open.
Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges.
That's fine.
Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site, and we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Good afternoon. The weather today will be what? Let's see. Tonight it'll be mostly it says mostly clear. I don't know. But before it said, you know, could rain. But anyway, it says mostly clear at around low around 61, calm winds. Tuesday, sunny with a high near 86, calm winds becoming south 5 to 7 miles an hour in the afternoon. Tuesday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 3 a.m. And prior to that, it'll be mostly cloudy with a low around 68. Wednesday, chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy with a high near 87. South winds 3 to 8 miles an hour. Chance of precipitation is 40%. Wednesday night, chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy with a low around 73. Thursday, it better be nice. It says partly sunny with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, because Thursday my kids are taking me to the Met game, so it better be nice. I don't want to sit in the rain. It says going to be high near 90. And Thursday night, there is a chance of thunderstorms before 9 p.m. Well, the game should be over by then. It's an afternoon game, so hopefully we'll get through it. Good afternoon and welcome. This is the Hunterdon Medical Center's Hour. Compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber Radio. And it's also compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and we are very privileged to have with us today Martin Klein, who's an MD, and got a lot of alphabet letters after his name. Some of them I are aware of. Some of them I have no clue what they are, but we can let him describe it. Yeah. but anyway, we're going to talk today about why we need a primary care physician. And before we get into that, Dr. Klein, first of all, thank you for coming.
No, thanks for having me. And of course, you realize this is now under protest. I didn't know you were a Met fan. So, but
what, Yankee fan?
Actually, Phillies.
And, oh, that's and then, even worse.
Well, exactly. So,
but I can tolerate Phillies more than I can the Yankees.
I'm with you.
I was born and raised in Brooklyn. And,
right on.
You know,
if you're a Yankee fan, I'd just walk out, period. But anyway.
That would be me.
Okay. But anyway, we digress. Go ahead.
But that's all right. Like I said, I can tolerate the Phillies. The Yankees, I just can't stand.
I'm with you.
But Anyway, we want to talk about primary care physicians, et cetera. And I know, like I said, you know, I always ask people, not only you, but everybody I speak to on this show, on the previous show, it's just it's a curiosity of mine how you got into this line of work. Some people say, oh, something happened when I was, 7 years old and I always wanted to do it. Other people like me say I had four kids, a mortgage, car payments and taxes, and I needed a job and Wunderbread offered me one. So yeah, that's how I got to be, working for Wunderbread. But I'm just curious, how did you get in this line of work?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Is this a job interview? Or gee whiz. Anyway.
It could be. You know, you could use it for that. I mean,
Yeah. No, but it's funny because, I've heard every reason in the book. Like some people, like, they knew when they were in the mother's womb that they were going to be a doctor when they were older, all this kind of stuff. It's nothing that's grand, and fascinating like that. I always, growing up, always was fascinated with the human body, physical fitness. I was always an athlete, surfer, was a personal trainer and all that kind of stuff. So I was always interested from that aspect. No one in the family. You always get that question. Is your dad? So no one in the family was. We had some friends, close friends who were physicians. But in college, I was a biology major and once again, just loved science. And I was actually going to go the PhD track because I love research and, that kind of stuff. Hence why I got a master's and all this, that sort of thing. But I realized I'm more of a people person, so I didn't want to be just – I realized that the lab and all this kind of stuff would be too boring for me. So I always enjoyed the human contact better. So ultimately, I was just kind of like, what better way to do it than to become a physician where I can develop relationships with patients? Go. And then as we get into that, why I became a primary care physician was exactly that reason, because I love people and contact with people and getting to know people over years and all that. And that's kind of ultimately why I ended up in – as a family physician as well.
Right. It's funny because people are going, well, why didn't you do what your father did? Well, first of all, my father was born in Iowa, okay?
Right.
And at 14, he left.
Yeah.
He went in the Coast Guard. He went in Navy Reserve. He was a tugboat captain in New York Harbor.
Right.
He was in the Merchant Marine and couldn't swim a stroke and hated the water. Yeah. But
I hope he had a good life jacket.
Yeah. Well, he needed one during the war. His ship was torpedoed. But he got me, when I was 15, Seaman's papers. And I went with him on a ship. And, the trailer boxes, the trailers carry, haul.
Right.
Well, we had, I think there was 90 above deck. And it was like 85 of them below, 80, I think, below deck.
Holy smokes, yeah.
And we went from New York down around the coast of Florida, up into New Orleans and back. Every 14 days, we were back in New York. I have to say, I made awesome money, more so than any time as a teenager.
Yeah.
It was the most miserable summer I ever had.
Yeah, right.
First of all, I get seasick. Second of all, we're in this storm off South Carolina, I believe it was. And, you got your cup of water and all of a sudden it's sliding down to the other end of the table. And there's your food comes sliding back. And I says, no, this is not for me, But ironically enough, like I said, my father, he couldn't swim a stroke. Hated the water. Hated the swimming. Not so much the water, but hated going swimming.
Sure.
Wouldn't go to the beach at all, ever.
Yeah.
And why did you spend your whole life on the water?
Right.
But that's what he did.
Yeah.
Me, I needed a job. I had four kids and a mortgage and, car payments and et cetera. And Wunderbread came along and offered me a job. And or I applied for a job at Wunderbread and I was hired. And I wound up in charge of their transportation, tractor-trailer drivers, not the – little bread trucks that deliver the bread, but the tractor-trailer drivers. And I had about, two or three plants from Maine down.
Right.
The East Coast. But it was just, like I said, it's just I have this desire just to know how people got into their line of work. Yeah. You know, it's just interesting to me how some people have. You know.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want to follow my dad into the priesthood. Yeah. But no, I'm kidding. He was an Allstate insurance salesman. Okay. He made significantly more money than I do as a family physician. Okay, I'm going to tell you that right now. But it would have bored me to tears to do what he did. He would provide us a great lifestyle growing up, and I was spoiled and all that. He did really well, and he was able to coach all my teams and do all this kind of stuff with his business. But, you know, sure, I could have taken over his book of business when he retired and all that, but that would have, just would have been very boring to me. So no offense to any insurance salesman out
there. No, none taken there, sure, you know. So,
But anyway.
So your role at the Huntington Medical Center is?
Sir. So, yeah, currently I'm the chairman of the family medicine department. So, so I do that in addition to currently I practice full-time as a family physician up at Riverfield Family Health Center, which is up in Clinton, New Jersey. And then I'm actually
– That's where I go.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Who's your – Vandenberg.
Oh, Jim, yes. Yeah. I just left him. So I'll have to tell
– I've been going to him for – years.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. No wonder why you look so good.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about
that. See, you have a 100 in doctor. That's why you look so good.
Also have a 100 in cardiologist.
Well, there you go. Who's that?
Dr. Rudnick.
Yeah, and he's great. Excellent choices. But I'm actually fortunate enough to be spearheading a new practice for 100 in Bridgewater, which will be opening in October, because we're trying to expand our market share to Somerset County and provide the kind of great care that we have here in Huntington County, expand our model towards that way. And so it's kind of fun to start
they're open that
outpatient
cure thing there. What do they call it?
Yeah, well, we have a couple things going on. So up in Somerset, right by the mall, we have a specialist building.
There you go.
Great. It's fantastic. So we're going to have a great presence there, you know, a gastroenterologist. Mm-hmm. We have our Mid-Jersey Orthopedics right down the street from there. You know, there'll be hematology, oncology, endocrinology. So all of our good docs, we're going to be going out that way, and that's why I'm going to be there as well, to have a primary care presence get that going as well. So, yeah. that's exactly what's going on. So, it's good you noticed
that.
Yeah.
No, it's ironic because, like I said, Dr. Vandenberg, it's been so long.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I can't think of – there's a doctor that's now works for the medical center.
Dr. Coates?
Yeah.
Another great doc. Yeah, he's now our vice president of medical affairs.
My doctor back when, you know?
Right, sure.
And then when he sold the practice or left the practice or whatever it was, I remember, I hooked up with Dr. Vandenberg.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've been with him ever since.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah, that's funny.
And so it's kind of interesting.
Yeah,
you know?
Small world.
Yeah, it sure is.
Right on. Yeah.
Okay. So. Primary care physician. When I was growing up 100 and some odd years ago.
Wow, you look really good.
Yeah. Well, it's close. But when I was growing up, you had a doctor.
Right.
And, you know, that was it.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Pretty
right.
much. Mm-hmm. That doctor did just about all.
Exactly.
Right? And I'm not saying it was good, and I'm not saying it was bad. Now we have people like yourself, Dr. Vandenberg and yourself, and others, obviously. But then we have specialists for every single different
thing. Indeed, yes.
And I understand that the purpose behind it, and I'm not saying it's bad.
Right. Well, we'll get into that.
But I also understand how it used to be.
Right.
And I mean, the one thing that stands out in my mind, I was about 11. And you know the hasp that go over and you put a lock through?
Yeah.
And there's like a little slit? Mm-hmm. Well, dumb me stuck my pinky in it for whatever reason. I don't even remember.
Because it was there.
It was there. And then instead of just wiggling it out, I jerked it out.
Right.
With that came 3/4 of my finger out.
Right.
You know, nowadays, you'd either go to the ER or you'd go to, you know, specialist or whatever. My mother just took me to her doctor.
Exactly.
And he took it and he put the whole hunk of piece and shoved it back in. And I screamed and pulled the nail off it and bandaged it and gave me a shot and said,
Yeah. See ya.
You had what was called, you know, now it's an in vogue term, a medical home. You know, we have to name everything these days and have all these catchwords, but without having that such name back then, that's what everybody had, was a medical home. So you just, that's where you went for everything.
That's and exactly the only thing that I have that even comes close to reminding me about it is the nail has ridges in it.
Yeah.
And it has ever since.
Right, right.
And the others are all smooth. Yeah. But other than that, that's it. He fixed it.
Right, exactly.
And so, I'm saying that for those of us that are my age or they're around my age, we're not – well, now we are. But then we weren't used to having so many specialists.
Exactly.
And I'm not, you know, I'm not saying it's bad.
Well, no, people have become more and more indoctrinated to that's the way it is, and depending on where they grow up. You know, if you grew up in New York City or towards North Jersey and that sort of thing, but in your generations in Hunterdon County, that was out here. It was family physicians. That's what this hospital.
Brooklyn.
But that's what I'm saying. But out this way even, I'm saying it's known where you're such a family physician predominantly. You're out in the country, so to speak, and back in the day, you know, family physicians used to even, like, you know, do appendectomies in the middle of Indiana. You know, I mean, there's just no other choices back in the day. And it's funny because when you said that, it's kind of like when you think of when some people are like, what is a primary care physician, which I can define for you in a second. But everyone knows what a pediatrician is.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, I mean, that's really your everyone has had the experience of a primary care physician. That's what a pediatrician is. Our first experience in this world, you have a pediatrician, right? You went for your shots. You went for your annual checkups, right? And this kind of stuff like that. You had an issue. You had an ear infection, sore throat. Where did you go? You didn't go to your nose and throat doctor. You went to your pediatrician. When you needed anything done, you went to the pediatrician. Then what happens is, as time goes on, you hit 18. You go off to college. You go off to life. If you don't have any chronic medical problems, what the heck do you need a doctor for anymore, right? Unless perhaps, you know, if you're female and you need to get back into the game because you need to get a gynecologist or an obstetrician, you know, because you're going to be having children. But a lot of times, a lot of people, particularly men, they don't re-enter the system really until there's a problem, right? Or if they go to college, maybe they need annual physicals for college, these sorts of things. But we've all had the experience of a primary physician where you went for everything. Now, of course, as you already alluded to, there are subspecialists, for pediatrics. But typically, you start with, here we have a great pediatric group, Hunterdon Pediatrics, or me as a family physician, we take care of pediatrics. And then usually you come to us first. You don't necessarily go, you know, because it's not as common to have really sophisticated problems, thank God, when you're little, that you don't need to go see a pediatric cardiologist, you know, when you have chest pain immediately, that sort of thing. But you're exactly right. So that's a great point.
And, you know, the thing is, too, that it is good because in some ways back then the doctors were – they knew a little bit about everything.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And nowadays – if you have to go, if you have a problem with your heart, you go to a cardiologist.
But you don't have to. That's right.
Right.
Yes.
But you don't have to is the point.
Is right. Right. Exactly.
Exactly. That's, you know.
And then just to circle back, so just say so after you get out of the pediatric world, right? So, which is funny because some kids have to be kicked out forcefully. some of my pediatric colleagues in town, it's like, these guys are like 23 years old. They're like, come on, you have to get an adult doctor at this point. They don't want to leave the womb of their parents' house. But they're pediatrician. But nevertheless, so when you look at when you are an adult, like what is a primary care physician? So there's people like me and Dr. Vandenberg who are family physicians. And so we take care of newborns through death, right? Mm-hmm. And we even do women's health, meaning PAPs and all that. We don't deliver babies anymore, but there are family physicians who do. There's a group in town that still delivers babies. And we have two residency practices, in the community that still deliver babies. Okay. And then the more you get away from New Jersey and the tri-state area, you know, you go to the Midwest and stuff, there's a lot more chance that your family doc will deliver babies and all that.
Right.
But we have a great group in town here that does that as well. And then the other thing, you'd have an internal medicine doctor, right? That's what, or people call it GP type thing. So there's docs are like that in the community who they don't typically, depending on most of them, don't necessarily see kids, you know, anybody below 18.
Right.
And they may or may not do women's health, but your typical internist will see, say, 18 through, you know, through geriatrics and all that.
Right.
Then you also now have, it's a specialty, but you could almost see it as if primary care is geriatricians. A lot of times I refer patients out who are in need of more specialized geriatric care than I can provide. But some people, that is who manages all their care.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last thing would be if you had, you know, as a female, some women, they really have no contact with any docs except for their gynecologist for years,
right.
You know, until
right.
they necessarily, maybe they get sick and they go to a clinic or something like that. But I even get new patients to this day, and I'm like, oh, do you, have you, and they're like 46 to 7 years old. And I'm like, when's the last time I'm in a physical? I'm like, well, I see my gynecologist every year. And I was like, well, you've been getting your mammograms. So, yeah. But that's it. They don't have any, right, they any, don't have any other doctors.
Physical.
Which could be right. fine. I mean, the gynecologists provide great care. Right. But that's another way that they do that. And then you have a lot of guys who have zero contact until they get sick, they're in mm-hmm. the emergency room, or their wife mm-hmm. finally makes them an appointment.
Right.
Yeah, so, but that's your options out right. there for primary care.
Some of us men don't like to go to doctors, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's just, I don't know, the mentality or something, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
right.
But, you know, it's – so why should a person have a primary care physician?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of reasons, but just to throw like a – if you want to get kind of to a research end of it. So there's been really good studies that have proven that states that have more primary care physicians per capita have better health outcomes, such as, you know, fewer deaths from cancer, heart disease, stroke. Those same states have higher rates of – cancer screening, higher rates of immunization, that kind of stuff. Uh-huh. So if you're looking from okay. that standpoint, so in essence, a longer lifespan and fewer premature deaths is really what you're looking at. Of if you try to look at it from a an analytical view, if you want to say like right. what's the data behind it versus kind of like what's like, you know, my opinion or uh-huh. other family physicians' uh-huh. opinions. So the data is there that that's the case, and that's why there's such a push in a lot of rural communities and stuff. There's a real dearth of primary care physicians, and there's always these things to try to entice people come out of residency and that kind of stuff to go to an underserved area and all that, because everyone knows it's proven how important primary care physicians are.
Well, it is, and, yeah. you know, because if you go to the primary care doctor and he finds something, whatever.
Right.
And let's just argument's sake, yeah. say it's for the heart.
Right.
And there's certain things he can do. Mm-hmm. And there's certain things that he doesn't want to get involved in because it's a little too intricate or whatever.
Right, right.
And then he'll recommend you to a cardiologist.
Sure.
And that's not bad.
Right.
When you think about
no,
it.
No, it's not.
You know,
right.
Because there are some things that you and other primary care physicians can do.
Right. And everyone has different comfort levels of what they can handle
right.
in terms of what they're.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Every doctor has
their own comfort level.
Yeah,
exactly. Some doctors, like, if it's high blood pressure, they'll punt that out, you know,
yeah.
versus, you know. So, yeah, you're exactly right.
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 But, you know, it's like I said, in this day and age, I think it's. Forget the monetary end of it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's good because as a primary care physician, you're looking at a large picture, okay?
Yeah.
And you're focusing on the large picture.
Right.
Whereas the quote-unquote specialist or cardiologist or internist or whatever, mm-hmm. they're focusing on one part of that big picture.
Right.
So if it's something that the primary care is not as comfortable with, they can refer it to.
Right.
And, you know, then the main thing is the patient's care.
Right, exactly.
I mean, regardless of who does it, it's the patient's care that
right,
counts.
Right, yeah.
And so I think it's, you know.
Yeah, and if you don't mind, that's
no.
you know, we can jump ahead on something we're
Go
talking
ahead.
About, the whole thing itself, because I think that's a great point. The problem with, like, let's just say, Larry, you're like, okay, about like self-referring to a specialist or not going to your primary care doctor first. Say it's something that seems obvious to you. Oh, I have this mole that looks suspicious. It's changed. Or, uh-huh. you know, even you're younger, I have acne. So both, okay, oh, I just need to go see a dermatologist. Well, number one, some primary care docs like me, you know, love doing dermatology and doing mole removals, and I manage acne and prescribing all that. So your primary care doc might be savvy to that anyway,
right.
number one.
Right.
But sure, I get it. You can just say, I didn't want to bother. I just went straight to this great dermatologist I know. Fantastic. That's kind of a benign situation. Now, what if, Larry, I've been having this chest pressure or chest discomfort. You know, not bad enough to take you to the emergency room, but it's been going on for a couple weeks. So who are you going to go see? You might say, oh, it's my heart. I'm going to go see the cardiologist. Or you might think to yourself with your diagnosis, oh, it's just reflux. I'm going to go see the gastroenterologist. Or you might say, oh, I'm a smoker. It's got to be my lungs. So you go to see the pulmonologist. Now, which one of those is right? or not, right? So you've already limited, you've already narrowed, it's great, Larry, you stole my thunder by saying you narrowed the focus of the diagnosis down versus having a broader differential. So when you go into that door, let's just say you decide to go to the pulmonologist, and they're going to say, okay, let's get a chest x-ray. Because, maybe it is your smoker. And then what happens with that chest x-ray? So then you do the chest x-ray, and it has like a, 2-millimeter nodule in the left lung base, and you probably would have lived to 110 and never knew about it otherwise and all that kind of stuff, but it's there. So the radiologist says, all right, we don't know what that is, and so we need a CAT scan with that radiation, right? CAT scan shows, it looks like it's benign, but you need a 6-month follow-up and then another 6-month follow-up to make sure, and then a year later. So then you just bought yourself 3 more CAT scans with all the radiation, the time it takes, the cost, and the mental stress and all that kind of stuff. Now, I'm not saying that you're not ever sometimes get lucky and pick the right specialist right away. But as soon as you do that, each of those specialists has their line of focus, right? And what their set of testing is going to be, whether it's a GI doc, I got to scope you. Of course, you got to scope you, that kind of stuff. But every test there's a risk of those procedures, whether it's infection, it's perforations, it's radiation from that sort of testing, or maybe you're getting a nuclear stress test, or you're getting a toxin put in your body. So all those sorts of things. And then you're leading to the fact that you might have what we call these false positives, and then you start chasing your tail.
Right.
So they all provide great care, and there's a time for it. But if, Larry, you came to – well, actually, you'd go to Dr. Vandenberg. So you went to Dr. Vandenberg and with saying that, and then he'd sit down. He knows you so well. He knows your past medical history, your medications you're on, everything you've had before. He knows you had a colonoscopy before. He knows this, that, and the other thing. So he can kind of narrow it down further before sending you off, to the specialist, which may or may not be needed. So that's a great chance to jump in on that. So that's a great point you made.
Well, no, I think that, week or so ago, I did see Dr. Vandenberg.
Right.
And I explained a problem I had. And he checked it out and said, he says, I really think you ought to go. It's a thing in my ear.
Sure.
And he said, I really think you ought to go and see, and he recommended a doctor.
Yeah, the ear, nose, and throat group. Right. Yeah.
Which I went this morning.
Oh, great.
Yeah. But.
You went to our group, I hope. 100. Yeah.
Yeah, down on
Sand Hill.
Sand Hill.
All right, good. All right. Just want to make sure you're all right.
Dr. Storch.
Shaft.
Shaft. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. That was close enough.
He's great doctor. Dr. Shaft.
It began with an S. So,
yeah, okay. You're close.
I was close. Come on. Give me a break.
Good. Well, good choice.
But anyway, it was like he referred it. He looked and he says, I don't see anything, but, maybe you ought to go get it checked.
Right.
So I did, the point is that I went to him first and he checked it out and didn't see anything, but felt that it should be checked further.
Exactly.
So, and that's the good thing. Now, I guess aside from all that, having a primary care physician, in your opinion, asking, does it make the patient healthier and longer life or what?
Yeah, obviously I gave you the journals say and then anecdotally, for sure, because what can happen is if you there's a terminology we talk about, continuity of care, right? So which in essence means year after year, Larry, you develop, same thing with Dr. Vandenberg, Dr. Coates, or whoever it was, and this and that. So year after year, we get to know you more and more. So we get to know, over time, your medical history, your social history, family history that changes, obviously, over time, that kind of stuff that we're constantly updating. We get to know what are your health goals? How healthy do you want to be? Some people don't care, right? No, I got to be honest, right? And there's some people you're not going to help. No matter what you do, I never give up on anybody, but it is one of these things like some people, either they don't even come or they're looking for a magic pill or whatever it is, or they just keep smoking, they keep drinking, they're still overweight, all these issues, and you kind of keep, pounding at them and try to get them to see the light, if you will. So, but over time, we can manage your progress, and then as I always try to say is like to optimize your wellness, if you mean like of what your goals are, because not everybody, I have marathon runners and triathletes, and I'm very active in gyms and fitness community and all that. So I have that end, and I have my I had a patient, a beautiful lady, 86-year-old for annual Medicare wellness.
She comes, bless her.
No, she's awesome. She's on one medication for cholesterol, lots of vitamins and stuff. She still gardens, and she comes in with a little cane. Yeah. So obviously, what she's going to be doing in life and her goals are going to be different than what yours are and what mine are. So. And if you don't have a primary care physician that has a continuity over time, you're not going to get that. If you go to a walk-in clinic or you go to the emergency room, or I gotta admit to you though, there's some specialists in our community that have that kind of relationship with their patients, because maybe their cardiologist, like Dr. Kutcher, has been around for a long time. He's a great doctor. He was our mayor here in town, all this kind of stuff. So people like that, or gastroenterologists, this guy Dr. Schwartz retired. It was funny because some of those patients, amazing guy, sweetheart of a guy. People might say overstepped his bounds by treating sinus infections and this kind of stuff. But nevertheless, what I'm saying is, so there are specialists who do have that kind of close relationship.
Right.
There's no question about that. But that's rare, especially this day and age when there's just not that kind of time anymore. The specialists are so busy and all that, so they don't have that kind of time, to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole concept, if I get back to it for a second, about the continuity of care, and then I like to also, I mentioned that term you used, even you alluded to, about having a medical home. And then in that medical home, which I kind of look at as almost like, first of all, as like a repository of like all of your data, if you will. So all the tests you ever had done, the labs you've done, every medication you've tried, all the consults, all that kind of in one spot. And that medical home is where, just like when you were 5 years old, it's where you went when you were sick. It's where you would go for your annual physicals, and it's where you go if you had a chronic condition. If you there's kids with asthma, and they don't necessarily need to see a pulmonologist, because if it's a mild asthma, they can see one of the pediatricians or us to manage it. So you have that point to go to that you're comfortable with, and they know you right when you walk in the door. Instead of having to reinvent the wheel all the time. So, and then I like to say too, the interesting thing is when. I know it's. I you get that sense when you know something's wrong with your patient. If you walk in, or Dr. Vandenberg sees you, and you're like, "Hey, Larry, geez, are you okay?" And you just might look a little pale, a little weak. Your personality's not what it usually is. That kind of stuff. So we can be quick to notice changes in you. And then at the same time, another thing I always like to point out is that we know, when someone is ill, when to take them seriously. Like I know your personality, Larry. I know you don't cry wolf. And if you're in there saying something hurts, that there is something wrong with you. And if you went to the emergency room or you went to an urgent care center, they don't know you. They might think you're just some hypochondriac or you're looking for pain pills. Who knows what, right? So then we can kind of do that and have that. And then on the flip side, it's the other thing. I'm like, come on, Larry, you're such a hypochondriac. Just calm down already. It's nothing. You're just stressed out. You're not getting enough sleep, right? So there's that thing too. But same thing, if you went to a doctor who doesn't know you and doesn't have that kind of time relationship with you, they might say, wow, this person is crazy, or they might take you seriously, and then they might put you through a whole battery of tests and all that you don't need.
Don't they have that with the computers and everything now, isn't there access to all the records within the medical community?
Yes, that's a great point. Let me just say that as a nice little advertisement for our system. We have what's called, you've noticed, a unified chart. So it's fantastic. So we have between the primary care and the specialists, everyone has access to your records, right? And it's kind of cool. Say you saw Dr. Schaft, right? So you saw Dr. Schaft. So his office note from that day, he doesn't even have to fax it anymore back to Dr. Vandenberg. Dr. Vandenberg, if you look in your chart tomorrow, like say you called in for a refill, so it's right there already. So he can see what Dr. Chef did, his entire office note and all that kind of stuff, okay? So that's true, and that's a great thing our system has, and we have great communication between the primary care docs and the specialists. They can even – Stan could send Dr. Vandenberg even an email through your chart and saying, hey, I saw Larry today. This is what we're doing. Thanks for sending him, right? So that's fine and good. So I get that point, but – It's a computer file. It's not a person. So
no, I understand
that. But you could be like, listen, I could take that thing. Somebody like you, and like I said, a lot of times, obviously we cover for each other. We're on vacation and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But one, if I walk in the room and it's one of Jim's patients he's been seeing for 20 years, and I've never seen the person, and their if it was a paper file, it would look like the U.S. tax code or something. So how do I get through that without, you know what I mean? Like, so yes, right, there's the basics are there, and that's important, right? So what medication is the patient on? You know, what allergies do they have? You might be able, and, but to pour through all that kind of stuff, it's still not the same as knowing you. As
no,
a, as
exactly.
A person,
right? No, I
so
understand perfectly.
It's better than
what
nothing.
You're
I totally agree.
Exactly.
And we're trying to increase the, and that's another great thing our system's doing. We're trying to increase that continuity of care across arenas. So
mm-hmm.
meaning when you
right.
go, if you do go to the emergency room with chest pain, now it's great. In the emergency room, they can kind of pull up a file of yours from our computer system to kind of get the basics on you. And same thing if you happen to get admitted from the hospital. So that the people in the hospital can say, like, okay, what is this guy's medication list and his allergy? So that's the whole – we want to break down those
right.
walls between systems so that we're all seeing the same thing.
Right.
So that
right.
that's really important. But even that being said, I mean, that's – you know, we have this great – you know, we have what's called hospitalists, right? So they take – say, because Dr. Vanberg doesn't see you in the hospital, all right? So we as family physicians – there's a couple in the community that still do that. But we don't see in the hospital anymore. So that hospitalist, if they walk in the room, they've never met you before, right? I mean, they can look at your file and all that, but they don't know enough
about
you.
Right.
They don't know. I'm not saying this, but they don't know that your
right.
wife just died 6 weeks ago, or you know the stuff that really 90%
mm-hmm.
of what it is. It's not just you know
right.
a person's just not a diagnosis. And all that. There's a lot, as you know, what goes into somebody's well being,
right.
you know. So
right.
and that's the beauty of that. You have to take that?
No,
all right. Okay.
That's all right.
Okay.
But personal care physicians, primary care
yeah.
physicians, they have an impact on people's health.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and they have a big impact on it. Pretty much,
mm-hmm.
don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to just cut down to what certain, yeah, say you're not home. If you look at different things, I can give you just like specific examples and something having impact on health. It can be something really grand in scope of say catching a cancer, right? So
right.
whether it's doing it directly. By feeling, I feel like a lymph node there, you know, that kind of stuff like that. And that kind of unfortunate things happen in my career. And then,
mm-hmm.
you know, it turns out somebody has lymphoma or, you know, that
right.
kind of stuff.
Right.
Or, you know, you someone comes in and like, yeah, I just been feeling a little dizzy at times, feeling off, this kind of stuff. And, you know, you listen to the heart, sounds like an arrhythmia. You get an EKG and the person is in atrial fibrillation or, you know, some other sort of arrhythmia. I just had a couple weeks ago something in what's called atrial flutter. Young guy.
I know what it is.
Yeah, oh, you do? Yeah, there
I
you go.
Have it.
Yeah, so there you go. This guy, you know, pretty healthy guy otherwise. You know, he's a little overweight and I've been harping on him to exercise and all that, but he's just kind of like, yeah, I feel like winded going up the stairs and I just feel dizzy at times. And then sure enough, there it is. So, I mean, in which he could have died. So there's those kinds of, you know, really dramatic types of things that are immediate impact. You know, and there's things simple, like you just said, you know, people come in, you know, have to suture them up or do this
right.
kind of stuff, you know, things
right.
like that. They come in with diverticulitis and you get them on an antibiotic and they get better. And like after two pills, instead of ending up in the emergency
right.
room. So,
and you know,
yeah, go ahead.
The ironic thing is like with my AFib, I don't feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't,
well,
when they even diagnosed me with it, I don't feel it.
Right.
Know?
Well, yeah. That's,
and it's like, you know, I happen to be, a while back. And, you know, it's just one of those things. And, you know, I just don't feel it. So I don't know how long I had it.
Exactly.
Before they picked it up.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly. I mean, you know, the classic. You know, we talk about the silent killer. I mean, that's
mm-hmm.
hypertension, right? Because
right.
it just years and years. Oh, I don't have high blood pressure. You know, who
yeah.
cares if it's
well, I got that too, but I, you know.
Oh, you're a mess.
Oh, yeah. High cholesterol, high blood pressure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're a
Touch of emphysema for smoking all those years. You know.
Yeah. You're what I call a Vandenberg special.
Yeah.
But that's funny. So, anyway, you know, but atrial fibrillation, that's a great point because you'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm fine. I'll feel it. But do you know, was it ever explained to you, Larry, what can happen if you have atrial fibrillation?
Well, now
what can
I
happen?
Know.
Yeah, you can get, right. So
right.
you can basically throw a clot
right.
because you have
yeah.
this irregular heartbeat, then,
right.
you know, which obviously can kill you. You throw this clot, goes, your brain causes a stroke. So
yeah.
that's the kind of thing that's major change. So you're like, oh, I'm fine. I don't,
and my
I don't,
heart doesn't beat fast. It's
called
slow.
Control. It's a controlled
right.
atrial fib.
And
which,
it's slow, and that's
yeah.
like, you know.
Yes.
But
right. Hopefully you're on anticoagulation of some sort.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Okay.
Warfarin.
Yeah, okay. Good. All right.
but you know, it's like it's ironic. I was going for a colonoscopy.
Yeah.
And I'm there, and they get me all hooked up to all this stuff, you know, and the nurses.
Oh, do they panic?
Don't you feel that?
Oh, yeah.
Feel what?
Yeah.
I don't feel anything. You don't feel that?
Yeah.
Then they bring another nurse in, or head nurse in, and she says, "You're not feeling a thing." I says, "What do you want me to feel? I don't feel anything, you know?"
Right, right.
I says, "You put me under when you do the colonoscopy, and I won't feel that either, you know?" She says, "Well, this isn't a joke." I says, "Well, I'm not laughing. I don't feel anything, you know?" So the doctor came in. I want to say it was Schwartz.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Right. And he says, "Well, we can do the colonoscopy and we'll take care of this after." You know, so he did it. And I'm thinking I'm going home. And my wife is there and she's going to drive me, you know. And he says, "No, we'll go downstairs first." And right. So we went down to the ER. And,
oh, boy.
And that's where I met Dr. Rudnick. He happened to be in the,
okay.
He happened to be in the ER visiting a patient of his or something.
Right.
And the ER doctor called him over. And he said the same thing. He says, "You're not feeling that, huh?" I says, "No." He says, "Well, some people don't." He says, "Some people do, but some people don't." He says, "And you don't."
Right.
He says, "So, you know." But it was just like, but I go there every now and then, you know, and, well, periodically to go checked up on it. But, you know, it was just kind of like.
Yeah, and actually, if you don't mind me jumping on that, because it just made me think of something. And then when you mentioned about getting your colonoscopy, which is great, because that's obviously one of the best, you know, cancer screening tests we have, because it can be curative at the time, right?
Right.
You get that polyp snipped out there before it comes, right?
So it's and I always have the polyps.
Yeah,
so,
right, I'm sure, right? But the thing is, what's interesting, some patients, you know, they hit 50, boom, they go right away. They have no arguments with it. Oh, it's a smart thing to do. I have other patients who, why I'm saying this is if I didn't have that relationship with these patients over, like, years or decades, I mean, I'm like a young guy, but I've had patients now, you know, for 16 years I've known some people. So if I didn't have the relationship with them, I every year at every physical, "Did you get your colonoscopy yet?" "No, I don't want to do it." "No, who needs that?" You know, they have every reason in the book to do it.
Right.
But some people, after 10 years, I finally get them to do it. But think about it. Is there any chance in heck that a doctor that they saw just once is going to convince them to get a colonoscopy? There's no way. I mean, these are people I've known that they trust me. They sent me their family members, and they're not even doing what I'm telling them, so or what I'm recommending, right?
Yeah, and
so
unfortunately,
that's the kind of relationship. Yeah, eventually they give in, you know, whatever it is for me nagging them for 10 years or whatever it is. But there's no way if you didn't have that kind of relationship with
somebody. They should get it because I have a friend of mine who passed away because of it.
Right.
And there was too far gone, and they couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, Larry, it's sad. I mean, I just last year I had a guy, great guy, totally healthy. You know, I mean, he's, you know, when I say no chronic condition, except he was a, you know, heavy smoker, but that had nothing to do with his colon cancer. You may or may not argue that, but it's totally same thing. Refuse, and then he came in one day, yellow, his eyes yellow as a banana, the whole bit, right? What's going on? He, you know, happened over the course. So he had metastatic, you know, he had stage 4 colon cancer, went to his liver and it spread, you know,
right.
And he,
that's,
you know, he fought it. Yeah. He fought, you know, he lasted for, you know, about 5-6 months, but, and once again, I, you know, who knows how long that guy would have lived if he just,
right.
He just, and he was even, I should have listened to, he was crying. It was just, it's awful, but you kind of, I mean, you know, listen, there's those, you know, statistics of those people who fall through the cracks, but it's such an, especially around here, it's not like you're in the middle of, you know, the Yukon or something.
Right.
It's like, there's access here to get these together.
Absolutely.
So I totally agree with you. That's a great point.
You know, and I strongly suggest to people to get it, you know.
It's good.
You know, I mean, every time I go, every couple of years, they tell me, you know, every 2 years or whatever, sometimes 3, depending on how good or bad it was.
Yeah,
when
right,
I
the
did
last
it.
One, how many polyps,
And, you know, but it's, I always have polyps. Right. You know, they always come back negative, but they're there.
Right,
you know,
right, right.
And that doesn't mean that they can't turn.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah,
you know. If someone doesn't have a primary care physician and to listen into this show or other reasons, I'm just saying,
yeah.
And they want to find one.
Right.
What do they look for in a primary care physician?
Yeah. Well, I mean, personally, what I would say is, I obviously want somebody who, you know, is compassionate, a good listener. To me, that's the number one thing about any doctor. It's kind of like is the you know, because pretty much as anyone you learn in medical school and everywhere else, the diagnosis is in the history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without even touching a patient, doing a test and all that, you get that differential in your head and you can narrow it down right away. So being a good listener, looking that patient in the eye, having a good rapport, you know, mutual trust together so that I know I'm doing the best for you and I know that you're going to do the best on your end as you can. And obviously you want somebody who's thorough.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, obviously you want somebody smart, knowledgeable. So you want suicide. I mean, obviously you can be the nicest guy in the world, but if you're an idiot, I don't want to go see you, right? I mean, it's kind of like, so certainly you'd want to see, hey, are they board certified? You know,
right.
It's not, and something about me, because I just love it, you know, somebody who's passionate about what they're doing. Who really wants to be there to try to help you. I mean, and you can read it when somebody
you can tell
somebody
absolutely
who loves what they're doing
absolutely
because you know that they're going to do their best. And then and it's funny because I can throw in another catchphrase. It's something we call shared decision making. So that's something that we really push in family medicine, this shared decision making where, for instance, a colonoscopy. So I sit down with you and I'm like, look, Larry, here's the statistics. How many people die of colon cancer every year? Here's our options that you can do a colonoscopy every 10, a sigmoidoscopy every year. Now we have this, you know, FIT test you can do every year and this kind of stuff and this and that. And here's a handout on it and this and that. I really recommend you do it. What do you think? And then so we come to as opposed to, I mean, you know, but I got to be honest with you. Some patients do like more of a patriarchal or matriarchal type of relationship where they want to be told what to do or whatever it is. But that's like if that person kind of comes to me, that's not me. I mean, that's then and then they ferret themselves out or weed themselves out and find that kind of doctor that fits what their kind of needs are, their personality.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting because you can see over a course of time if you work with other doctors how each kind of doctor has a similar sort of following, if you will. And
mm-hmm.
you can kind of tell,
right,
you know, who kind of, you know, fits a certain mold. Like some doctors are just, you know, you know, we'll do a lot more testing and this sort of stuff. Other doctors tend to give more reassurance and this, you know, so that kind of stuff.
Right.
So when you're looking for a doctor, I mean, to me, that's the things I would look for.
I think you have to relate.
You may
not be on the same, obviously, on the same educational level
or anything
like that.
Right.
But, like, when I, the first time I met Dr. Vandenberg,
right,
I liked him.
Yeah.
Because he listened.
Yeah.
He asked questions, obviously, but he listened to my answers, and he wasn't in a hurry to get me out the door.
Right.
And that just struck me as, I don't know, cool.
You know? Yeah, no, it is. Right. Exactly.
And so I've been with him for, I don't know, God knows, 20-some-odd years now, whatever it is. I'm not sure, but it's been a long time. And, you know, but I think that doctors, like anybody else, you have to relate.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you don't, if you're me, you're not going back.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly
and I'm
right.
sorry, but I'm not. You
right,
know?
Right.
But if you relate to them, you know, and they listen, you know, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I do know what I feel, inside.
Right.
And I feel it, and you don't feel what I'm feeling right now, you know, so – you know, if I'm explaining it, it's great if you're listening.
Right.
You know, some don't.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, I think you have to find somebody that you can relate to.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And some people have a broader, ability to relate to different things. That's kind of fun. I mean, that's something mm-hmm. I love. I love different kinds of people and characters and all that. So I have everything from – I have a following from a local halfway house in the community,
and
I get one after the other, and they like me because I don't judge anybody. I just have I see what happens until you disappoint me or do something mm-hmm. to me. Why do I get so I can connect I'm kind of at that sweet spot of at my age of I can connect with the youngsters, if you will, and I still know it's cool and you know, I'm not trying. It's just who I am and high energy and that. And then I said I have a huge geriatric population who I relate to and just absolutely adore. I just love that kind of experience and that kind of grasp of the world and all that. And my World War II vets who are still hanging in there, and Korean War, that kind
God
of
God bless them.
Yeah, exactly. So to me, there's always something about somebody that I find interesting, you know. As a doctor, if you just have to find that one thing you relate to, and to me, it's something I'll look at. It's something they're wearing. and they're just kind of like, oh, they have a little, you know, a girl might be wearing something like with a skull pattern. And I do have this thing, like I have like skull cufflinks, so I'm like, oh, wow, I love skulls and this and that. And then now I have a new patient because they're like, wow, my doctor likes skulls or notice I like skulls.
Yeah, right.
Or they might say, oh, you like this kind of music. And, you know, you just kind of, you find something to connect with, right? And then if it's an older patient, you might, you're doing this, the family history and like, oh, how many, you're married? Yeah. How many kids you have? And then, oh, grandkids. And then, oh, where did you go to college? And then they're like, oh, I went to Seton Hall. Like, oh, my dad went, my sister went to Seton Hall. Then, boom, there's another patient you connect with. So there's, innumerable ways to connect with people if you want to. You know, some people don't want to, and that's fine. But to me, that's what makes medicine fun. It's not like, it's not your AFib, right?
Right.
I mean, that's like, you know what I mean? That's a condition. It's you.
Right.
Larry, you're a good guy, and I like talking to you. That's the kind of stuff. I want to help you to
sure.
that kind of stuff. To,
sure.
to me, that's what's fun about it,
right.
is the human element, not the
right.
diagnoses, not the medications. So there's some way, if you can't find a way to connect with somebody, then you're not in the right field.
Yeah. My college was 17 and went into service.
You seem pretty well off for it, sir.
If someone wanted to schedule an appointment with you or your group or whatever,
right.
how would they do that?
Well,
in that closing minutes we've got here.
Well, in me specifically or just, I mean, in general? Like, yeah, so
you physically, one?
Of course, obviously, I have, you know, I'm biased.
Of course, you physically first, and then, you know, the group that you're attached to.
Yeah, no, so first of all, right. So if you go, I don't want to obviously advertise straight for, you know, Riverfield Family Medicine in Clinton, New Jersey. Anyway.
You can.
So we, but we have.
Second floor of the gym.
And sign up for the gym on your way in and buy a smoothie. Anyway, so Hunterdon Family Medicine. So if you went on, you know, the hospital, Hunterdon Healthcare, the websites, and there's all the links, the different types of doctors and that kind of stuff. And you can look up for family medicine to find, you know, you might find who, you know, what someone that's local. Like in town here, there's Hunterdon Family Medicine and at Cornerstone, which is right on the grounds in front of the hospital. There's obviously groups, there's groups that aren't owned by the hospital, but they're affiliated with the hospital in the community, that kind of stuff. They're all great doctors, you know. So you could, but what I always say is from even back when I first started is like, you know, you ask your friends, you ask your family, you ask your coworkers, like, where do you go? Do you have a doctor? You ask them where they go. So that's the first thing I ask when I walk into a room with a new patient. I'm like, oh, yeah, first time here, huh? You knew the area? And they might say yes, no, or I'm from where? I said, well, how'd you find me? They're like, oh, I'm buddies with Larry, and he said you're a good guy. Or, you know, you take care of my uncle, whatever it is. So that's one way. So that's a great way to word of mouth because they know your personality. They know, Larry, you know people. You could say, you know what, Vandenberg's not for you. Or Vandenberg's a great guy. You'll like him. And then the other ways these days, it's kind of interesting how – and I'm kind of an old school guy. I don't do Facebook and all this stuff.
Neither
but now – I know what's interesting, Larry. I ask people, and they're like, oh, yeah, on my Facebook page, everyone's raving about you or they're this and that. Or, you know, the women of – what is it? It's called the Women of Hunterdon County website. There's this one –
Beats
which
me.
which is great because I've gotten good reviews and all that. So there's these networks, that social media, right? So people do that. And then lastly, another way, if like – you know, just as, you know, for people, if you're just kind of like – well, locally, they'll say, oh, I looked at my healthcare plan to see who's in the area, and I went online and reviewed you.
Okay.
And I'm like, what did it say? and they're like, obviously, good
sometimes
things.
You don't want to know.
But that's what's funny. But now people go on these, you know, the search engines to read Doximity and all these things to look up about doctors.
Well, Dr. Klein, I really appreciate you coming today. And
no,
the time
awesome.
Flew by in no time
Holy
flat.
Smokes. Yeah, right.
And we have to get off the air here shortly.
Oh, okay.
So
all right.
We will be here in the same time. Same station.
Same bat channel.
Next week.
Same
bat channel. Yeah. Remember, stay healthy. And if you need a doctor, look up a family physician. Riverfield Healthcare is a good one.
Just in our Hunterdon network, please. That's,
okay.
That's all that matters. Not just Riverfield.
There you go.
Anyone that's affiliated with Hunterdon Medical Center.
And I'm Larry Cartwright, and I'll see you again next week. Thank you again, Dr. Klein.
Thank you,
Larry.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent
who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
USA Radio News, I'm Jason Wirth. Donald Trump has attacked Hillary Clinton in a campaign speech today, saying that during her time as New York senator, she actually hurt the working men and women of New York.
Upstate job growth stagnated, with manufacturing jobs plunging, record-setting levels, nearly 25%.
Tens of thousands of travelers stranded today as a result of problems with Delta Airlines. This man was headed off to his honeymoon.
We are working with our travel agent to try and figure out if we should just hang out with Delta and try and get down there today with them, or they are offering refunds for tickets. And so we're thinking about getting a refund and going through a different airline.
And publicly funded University of Wisconsin Stout is going politically correct by removing two historical paintings